been a busy day. Can I just start by thanking Simon, Sladen and Helen Gush and the team here at the V&A for organising this conference with us at Central. Thank you very, very much. There's been a lot of work. We haven't talked much about labour today, but there's been an awful lot of labour. There's a labour you see here, but there's a labour that happens behind the scenes. So thank you to you all. It's been a really provocative day and a really interesting day. For those that have only been here for part of the day, I hope that some of the reflections that you'll hear on discussions that we had earlier will prove useful and maybe contextualise some of the things that have been said in the final session. So Simon Sladen set up the question at the beginning of the conference, what's next for British theatre? Brexit has in many ways served as a locus for multiple crises being played out simultaneously. And Rowan Rutter spoke about the importance of locating today's debate within wider discourses of class, gender, culture. Peter Burnish reminded us of the fact that theatre engages with the here and now. It's of the present. And our discussion today is really about a snapshot of where we are and where we might go. But of course, that discussion of where we are is always related to where we came from. History, the importance of recognizing history, and it's something, the historical dimensions have emerged throughout the day. The whole day has reminded us of what a broad church, this idea of British, and I put British in inverted commas, theatre is, and how our understandings of that which is British are indelibly linked to Europe. Mark Ball spoke of a Europe being wired into Lyft's DNA. Miguel Oyarzun cited Simon McBurney's relationship to France and the importance of his training with Lecoq. Rowan Rutter spoke about theatre borrowing from other traditions, but also she reminded us of what can sometimes be a fine line between mini-acquisition and appropriation. There is always a need to think through the implications of what we do. Rowan articulated the fact that Shakespeare, so often seen as the most English of playwrights, set a great many of his plays outside Britain. We've always engaged with other cultures. France, as David Land reminded us, is really not that far away. I speak here as a researcher who's part of a community of academic staff and practitioners at the Royal Central School of Speech and Drama, who work across 11 languages. We haven't spoken much about languages and linguistic difference, but it is important, from Arabic to Spanish, languages that shape how we think about what theatre is and how it functions, how it travels and how we relate to our sense of heritage, or rather, heritages. The easy travel options now available as Peter Burnish, gone on to the next page of my notes, have shifted modes of theatre making. Peter reminded us of this earlier in the day, offered new possibilities for collaboration and exchange, what he termed the blending of different approaches. Peter drew on Pascal Guillen's view of theatre as a series of signs that offer orientation, that allow us to socialise, to tune in our skill sets and to take a critical position of society, a critical position in society, socialization, qualification, subjectification. Yes, it's an economic industry, but it has a social function. And here he drew on Nancy Fraser's observation of a theater for debating and deliberating rather than just buying and selling. Advocating for a theatre of dissensus, a way of dismeasuring, of challenging and destabilizing, the right to act, the right to disobey. Christopher Balm advocated for the need to regain mastery over the metaphors of public discussion. The performing arts are in crisis, but not just because of Brexit. 14 years ago, I co-edited a book called Theatre in Crisis. I'd argue we've always been in crisis. It's just a different set of crises. There are serious challenges around how cultural funding is perceived to serve the metropolitan centres rather than the regions. Some of you here may remember the publicity generated by Peter Stark, Christopher Gordon, and David Powell in 2013 with their report, Rebalancing Our Cultural Capital, which calculated that the Department for Culture, Media and Sport and Arts Council England funding to the arts benefited Londoners with 69% per head as compared to £4.58 in other regions of England. Arts Council England contested these figures, highlighting both investment outside London and the impact of London-based administrations who have a wide touring presence across England, as with Headlong, Fevered Sleep, ATC, and you've heard from Ramin Gray earlier today, and Frantic Assembly. But the discourse that showed how companies and venues outside London linked to partner organisations on the continent, the important work in Doncaster, in Derby, and elsewhere, the funding from Creative Europe that has allowed for a wide range of theatres across the length and the breadth of the UK to intersect with other venues and other companies in the EU, all of this has remained all too invisible. Important stories that are not told. Stories that remained silenced, if you like, or erased from the whole discourse around remain or exit just before the Brexit vote. Christopher Balm reminded us of the complex networks of collaboration benefiting regional organisations which were largely silenced by the negative rhetoric of bureaucratic complexity, where the city, or rather the signifier of Brussels, was seen as the embodiment of all that is unnecessarily wasteful. Cut us out of this evil city, and a new dawn will emerge, he said. Tony Fisher, Uta Steiger, Christopher Balm, Peter Burnish have all advocated in different ways during the course of the day for an affirmative concept of complexity. We are complex. The world is complex. The coordination of 28 countries with differing traditions is not going to be easy. Let's not pretend it ever can be. Much of the day has touched on the need to reformulate the tropes and metaphors we think with. Christopher Balm advocated for a shift in language, thinking about a microcirculation through the capillaries rather than the main arteries like London, a system growing and promoting artistic exchange, where the head of Brussels is cut off, may well, he noted, impose damage to the body politic. The body shifts, it grows, it changes. Bodies never remain the same. Uta Steiger reminded us of the long history of the imagery that has positioned the UK to the side of Europe. But there are all other versions, as David showed us, the moat. So one key thing, the need for us to think through cognitive frames, to reset the terms of the public agenda. Joe Murphy and Joe Robertson of Good Chance Theatre spoke about the art making they're engaged in with different refugee communities. I speak here as the daughter of refugees. My parents came over in the 30s, a difficult time. I often think, my father's been dead for many years now, about the Britain he came into. I think about the different kinds of challenges facing us now. Nostalgia, the Britain he spoke about in the 30s was welcoming on one level, it was also deeply racist and deeply problematic. Let's not go back and idealize a nostalgia of the past. The Joe spoke about the questions Brexit had forced them to ask. We didn't come with big ideas, they said. We came with questions, the need to question, to allow for the creation of new ties and new partnerships at a time of uncertainty. Mark Balls, too, spoke of the signal the UK is giving out of a country in retreat. What does it mean for us to hear artists say that the UK feels less hospitable? We live and work and create together with European nations. Europe is not just a market. Let me take us back to the post-World War, the immediate aftermath of the Second World War. The Avignon and Edinburgh festivals, founded in the aftermath of World War II as a way of thinking through how culture can bind rather than divide societies. Let's take those societies that were at war and bring them together through culture. Uta Steiger and Peter Burnish drew on Pascal Guillen, as I mentioned this morning, in articulating a complex of crises that appear to be particularly relevant to the current moment. Failure of economics, of government, of democratic institutions. with culture as a form of collective identification that allows or can allow a community to cohere. We heard from Kuli about some of the initiatives she's been involved in, ways in which we can work to create coherence. Art as a way of probing the tricky issues that can't be reduced to sound bites. Everybody's too in love with sound bites, but sound bites don't capture the complexity of the moment we're living in. Mark Ball spoke of good art as about ambiguity. We need to find the ambiguity to be able to take things forward. We don't live in a black and white world. Artists have their own stages and a responsibility to talk about the issues that are shaping the world, to ensure we are not cowed by a culture of fear, to ensure we do not self-censor. She reminded us, Natalia Colliada reminded us of the importance of the unknown territory. Her evocation of Vaclav Havel also took us back to genealogies and lineages. Ramin Gray and David Land cited Sophocles and Aeschylus, delineating the relationship between theatre and democracy. Many speakers today have spoken of theatre as a place where we can push against unethical boundaries, where we can debate the need to act and how we act, where we can recognise our responsibilities, doing rather than just talking. Natalia, the two Joes, and Kuli spoke about action, the challenges involved in breaking in, opening a door that may appear closed. Were our doors, I asked, too conveniently closed so we didn't hear what was happening in the next room? Were we, as Martina asked, too complacent? And how, crucially, can we address this? How can we really face what's happening? Kuli was really honest about the fact that we appear unable to keep up with what's happening. We feel we're running behind. I suppose the first way of dealing with that is to acknowledge that it's happening. A number of our speakers spoke of the need not to generalize about what the European is. From her position as creative producer at Hull Truck, Rowan asked us about what nationhood means, recognition of the world out there, the necessity to tell different stories and to tell them better, but also the need to think through how we use language. I go back here to Chris Balm's challenges earlier on in the day, the labels and tags and titles through which we catalogue and categorise. Diverse audiences want to hear their lives reflected on stage. On a personal level, I was delighted to hear Mark Ball evoke the Viva Festival in Manchester, which I co-founded in 1995, as a way of creating a space for different voices and different stories, a space for discussion and encounter. Martina and Catherine from the Goethe Institute gave practical examples of encounters and intercultural changes they have facilitated. Dushka asked us to look forward. What might we do? Ramin spoke of theatre as prophetic. Mark Ball offered us a set of actions. We should lobby to fill the EU funding black hole. We should advocate for new money to develop new partnerships around the world. We should lobby for free movement of artists in Europe and beyond. Miguel Oyarzun noted the importance of cultural exchange. What will happen to the current situation, which allows small and media sector organisations to obtain funds that will allow for the UK to lead on collaborative projects with European partners? What will happen when we're not able to do that? He also spoke as an EU citizen, one of the 3.3 million in the UK who contribute to the UK and did not have a chance to vote, and advocated for culture as a way of building bridges. The configuration that we define as Europe isn't perfect, but it is a space where our ideas about self and other have been challenged and tested. It's a place where, as Pedro Almodóvar noted in his visit last year to the BFI for the retrospective of his work, ideas of citizenship are debated and protected. It's reassuring to be part of the EU, he confessed. It's about a shared cultural heritage. It's a place in which tolerance of others and other cultures has been promoted. Not always perfectly, but it's tried. Crucially, it's also had a remarkable effect, he said, in suppressing the kinds of violence that we see surfacing with nationalisms. It allows us, in the words of Declan Donlan, to think about what we do as artists. I love that. So to finish, it's my time, my 2-minute warning. So to think about the ways we communicate with others. It's not just about the communication, it's about the ways we do it. And I think Declan Donnellan summed it up beautifully in his acceptance speech for the 2016 Venice Biennale Lifetime Achievement Award, where he talked about a means for one group of people, theatre is a means for one group of people, to look at and to engage with another group of people doing something. Its importance lies in allowing us to develop our empathy. And empathy is ultimately about understanding that we have no idea about what the other person is thinking. We have to have an empathetic connection to try and understand, to recognize that difference. For as Declan Donnellan states, it's just to see that another human being is different from me is the first act of any political discussion. Yeah? So we need to find a way of forging a space for culture where the term "that face doesn't fit" is never heard again. All faces have to find a way of fitting in to what it means to create culture. As Cully reminded us, why this, why now, who for, and with who? So I ask you as we finish, are the arts really for everyone? Who decides who that canon is? What that canon is. What do we still have to learn as theatre makers? How can we ensure we keep learning, we keep open-minded, we remain open to possibilities? The radical openness that Tim Suttle spoke of, the importance of access, how we negotiate, the borders still in place. There are many different ways of making theatre, Declan Donnellan states. All we can do is to make the illusion as well as we can and as responsibly as we can. We have responsibilities and we forget them as our peril. David Land spoke about the need for us to go on a journey of discovery, however long, however hard, and to come back with the truth. We need to express dismay, to speak out, and to discover the truth about our own humanity, the suffering and the pleasure that that brings. And as we leave, and this really is my final sentence, I want to return to Paulo Freire, who Cully quoted in her presentation, to ask ourselves and to continue asking ourselves as we move on to the Goethe Institute, and I hope to continue this discussion, and wherever we go later today, and where we go tomorrow, and the day after that, asking us what we can do today so that tomorrow we can do what we are unable to do today. Thank you.